Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and welcome to the program. As always, I am joined by my excellent panel from the ever-shrinking city of Youngstown, Ohio, author, activist, and teacher, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Hello, Simon. Thank you for that rousing introduction. Looking forward to another terrific show where we solve all the world's problems, and then we don't have to, and then everyone's happy until next Sunday.
Right. And from the City of Angels, psychologist Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be aboard. Hello, men.
Right. How has the week treated you?
It's been a lovely week. Played golf this morning. Had a great weekend with my beautiful wife. Life is good.
Splendid. And from Garden State, my good friend Bill Conrad, now the master of pneumatics. Bill, welcome.
Thank you, Simon. I'm looking forward to today's show. It's been a great weekend. The weather's gotten good out here, and it's just life is good.
Gentlemen, I am always wide open to ideas, but I'm just going to throw some raw meat in the room and see where it goes. Let's kick off with Obamacare. Is it working or not? Now, it depends on who you listen to or who you watch. MSNBC is crowing that 7.1 million people have signed up, therefore exceeding the number that Obamacare was supposed to get. And Fox, on the other hand, is saying, what, how many of them have actually paid the premiums? It's a curious situation. Who wants to jump in? No one.
Well, and clearly CNN is just talking about the plane still, right?
Right.
I'll jump in. Why not? I'm all for national health care. My wife is from Holland, so I've been there, and I've talked to other family members. And when it was set up, it was a great thing in Holland. It changed a lot because of the nature of the demographics of Holland, as all countries have. But the model is there. And we probably could have expanded on it and made it better for the people in this country and what have you. I mean, as someone once said to me, if the politicians could all just sit down and say, hey, I got a great idea. Let's give everybody in America the same health care plan that we have. We'd have the best damn health care plan in the world. But, of course, the politicians can't do that. How dare they share the spoils? But what I don't understand is the 7 million figure, or 6 million figure, or 5 million figure, because it's my understanding there are 40 million people not insured. That's the government's number. So shouldn't we be trying to get 40 million people signed up and get better insurance? So that's my number one question. My number two question is something that I think everyone will agree to. The biggest problem is, my youngest son is one of the problems, kids his age at 24 who got jobs, just got out of college, just got his grad school degree, his master's, he didn't sign up. He doesn't care to sign up because the fine is cheaper by a long shot than actually getting Obamacare health care numbers for him by himself. And that, and he, his friends, and a lot of other people I've spoken to who have children, comments I've seen on blogs and whatnot, are basically from the same page. We talked about this last week. These 20-year-olds like we were when we were in our 20s. We think we're supermen and superwomen. That we're never going to get a sec. We can work through anything. It's never going to happen to us. And I think that's where the fix has to come in, because when that comes, when these younger kids, they got to start signing up now, bring the risk pool down, and the cost down for everybody would be a good thing. How do you do that? I think they've tried to enlist all sorts of young celebrities. They've done some advertising for it, and the kids, you know, like, and can you blame kids? You know, whether they're why should they pay the $95 fine, as it will be for my son, as opposed to paying $400 a month for single health care insurance that he doesn't think he's ever going to need? It's a no-brainer for him, and I think that's a problem that. Hopefully they'll be able to overcome, get more people signed up, bring the cost down, and offer better insurance for everybody.
Right. In fact, my stepson has the same issue. He's a young invincible, and I think he's 23, and yet... You know, that they wanted to ding him $200 a month, and honestly, he can't afford that. So, it's better to take the $95 a year hit.
Yes. Also, my son lives in New York City, and if he goes, if I get sick, I go to one of the 100 free clinics around there. They're not free, but if he gets whatever, he can run there, pay a limited fee. I think it's based upon what his income is or something, or make a donation, and he'll get health care. How good it will be, I don't know. But that's like his plan B. And he says most of his peers feel that way. And that's something that, like I just said earlier, and I can't wait to hear what the other two have to say, is how they get, once they get over that hurdle, It should be a real domino effect in the positive, I would like to think.
Right, and I'm gonna leave Bill till last because I know what he's going to say. So, Gary,
yes,
you're my next victim. Okay, you're a doctor, albeit you don't go around with a stethoscope and measure heart rates and things like that. What do you think of the Obamacare situation?
I honestly don't know. I think it's way too early to tell. What I do know is, and I know. Look, I'm really not some crazy liberal, but I think that I just think that the Republicans are not very smart, and I don't trust them. I don't trust what they tell us. I don't trust when they said that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I don't trust them when they believe to a large degree that climate change is a hoax. I don't trust them when they believe that the Earth is 6,000 years old. I don't trust them when they think that more guns don't cause more deaths. I don't trust Republicans. I don't think they're smart. I don't think that they are. Now, they are smart people in the party, but I don't think as a national party they're bright at all. And they're saying these things as if they know. They sound today about Obamacare the way they sounded in 2003 about Iraq and about Saddam Hussein and about weapons of mass destruction. I just don't trust them. So I am saying it's wait and see. And the thing that I've been saying on this program is, what have we had before? And what have we had before is a very increase year by year of health care costs, that if you have asthma or diabetes, you could be dropped or not get health care, that when it's left to the corporations, they are more interested in the bottom line than the greater good. And Simon, I honestly don't know. What I do know is I don't trust the Republicans and their take on it. And I just think that they're really kind of a detriment to our country these days.
Okay. I'll rephrase the question.
Yep.
You know, MSNBC is crowing about how good it is, and Fox is saying, it's all smoke and mirrors. You know, has the news gone in a direction it shouldn't have?
Probably, Simon. I mean, I don't know is that if there were 20 million people who signed up, I think Fox would find a problem. I think if 4 million people signed up, MSNBC would say it's a victory. You know, I honestly don't know. It's just so early. And I don't know that if the iteration of Obamacare in a year from now or 2 years from now is going to be much smoother and better and easier. I don't know what's going to happen with health costs. I don't know if they're going to go down. I don't know if the results are going to be better. I honestly don't know. In my practice, I don't take insurance because when I took insurance from Blue Cross or Pacific Care or places like that, they would pay me one-fifth of what I charge now. So it wasn't like it was this huge boondoggle that Blue Cross was giving me patients. They would pay hardly anything. So, Simon, it's people who are pontificating about what it means. How could we know? It just started a couple months ago where people were able to start getting on. How do we really know?
Okay, now, you mentioned something I had not really thought about. I've seen lots of examples on the TV of doctors saying, "No, I don't want any part of this." Is the insurance or are the insurance companies running the show rather than the doctors?
It's hard to find a doctor these days who takes insurance anyway for a lot of people. Listen, I work in a very affluent area of Los Angeles, I have a very specific clientele. I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of changes. I mean, if we have, you know, all these 40 million people come into the healthcare system, there's a shortage of doctors. We're going to have to figure this out. I think what everyone's saying is what we had so terrific. Are the insurance companies and the healthcare system putting $500 million into our political elections? Are they running the show? Probably. And you wonder why they're doing that. You know, you're wondering why. You know, ExxonMobil is putting all the money in to get away from, you know, going greener. Yes, you're right. It is the insurance companies that are running the show, in my view.
Right. You know, I live in a relatively small town. I think we have, you know, population of 20,000. We have more doctors than we know what to do with, but my wife has to go 100 miles to, you know, talk to a doctor about, you know, her foot problem. You know, it makes not a lick of sense, and I guess that's the way the healthcare system is going.
Yeah, probably. I mean, but that has nothing to do with Obamacare. I mean, that has to do with, you know, demographics and logistics. I don't think that has anything to do with Obamacare.
Oh, yes, it does.
How so?
The health plan she has, you know, there are only a limited number of doctors she can visit, and foot doctors are 100 miles away, even though there's one probably within 2 miles. And I have no problem with the doctors not wanting to accept a particular insurance policy, but it's not clear to me that Obamacare is quite what it is made out to be.
But Simon, if through Obamacare you might get, let's say, PacifiCare, United, or Blue Cross. And before Obamacare ever came into existence, for example, as a doctor, I wasn't taking those anyway for the longest time because they don't pay anything. Obamacare would just allow you to buy into these same companies. And it isn't like it's Obamacare insurance. It's basically Blue Cross insurance. It's basically United Healthcare insurance, PacifiCare or Aetna. And so they're paying. They're going to pay. These companies will pay the foot doctor what they've been paying for a long time, like pennies on the dollar, maybe 20%, 30% of what they could charge for cash or for Cadillac plans. So they may choose not to take your insurance, and you may have to go further to get that. But I'm not sure that's because of Obamacare. It may be, but I honestly don't know.
Well, you know, I guess my one grumpy comment would be, you don't take most of these insurance plans anyway, you know, so it doesn't bother you.
It doesn't bother me, because if you were going to my office for a session, Blue Cross would pay me maybe between $50 and $70. And I charge to my high-fee patients $300 an hour. So if you're, let's say, a wealthy person and you could afford that, and you would gladly pay $300, but then you say to me, by the way, Gary, I have Blue Cross insurance. Do you accept that? And I would have to say yes, then I would lose literally $250 on our session, every session that we have. And that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I'm in total agreement with you on that. I feel the same way.
Right, and that was before Obamacare, though. That has nothing to do with Obamacare. That's all that I'm saying.
Right. I'm sure that Bill is chomping at the bit on this one. Jump in.
I hope everything's legitimate. I hope that this program that I have bought into, which goes into effect May 1st, stands up to what it promises. It's interesting that they give you this this fee schedule. Like the plan I bought into, in theory, if I was making a fair amount of money, it apparently costs $1,100 a month, of which I get a tax, an instant monthly tax credit of $1,031 a month. So I'm paying under $150 a month for my family of four. Pretty good. I was paying at my last job about about twice that amount, around $300 a month. So I'm really happy that I can buy into this particular program. You know, my question becomes is if I was making more money, obviously the cost of the plans go up. But again, at this point, I'm paying about 50% of what I used to pay. So that's a good thing for me. The other thing is that there's certain laws that have to do with buying into this insurance. One, if you have a catastrophic illness, they cannot drop you because of Obamacare. Secondly, if you cannot find a person that is in network within a reasonable distance of your house, and again, that's kind of up to interpretation, they have to find you somebody out of network that you can visit that's in a reasonable territory according to this policy. So, you know, again, they have not charged me yet. I'm waiting for the bill to come in the mail, and then I can start because I tried to make my first payment, and it says the insurance company is going to send me a bill in the mail, and I need to pay it as soon as it comes in. And I actually have up until I think the end of May to make my first month's payment. So I'm in a good position as far as my health care, provided it's the real McCoy and everything goes through. So I think that what we need to do is talk about this in June or July after I've used it a few times to see if I've run into any faux pas, because right now it's very attractive to me. I have another thing. I have a dental care program that what it is I pay a yearly fee for this program, and they essentially give me a fee schedule for what I do for whatever services I buy. So they're probably in the neighborhood of 50% of what I would normally have, they would normally charge off of their fee schedule. And from that, then one thing with dental plans, once you hit maybe you spend $1,500 to $2,000 worth of fees, you don't get any more coverage. That's the way most of the dental plans are. So for me, I can, and my family, we're going to just pay a reduced fee, and it's there's nothing that I have to pay on a monthly basis to keep that fee schedule. So I think I'm in a good situation, and you know, only time will tell on whether or not this is the best program for me, and whether or not this is the same experience that other people get in the United States. There you go.
Sam, do you want to add anything before we move on?
No, I just think, you know, I'm happy for Bill, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of success stories, and there's a lot of failure. There's probably a lot in between. I do agree with Gary that it's too young to get started, and those that want to track it are going to track it, and those that want to applaud it are going to applaud it. I think that, you know, it's just got to work its way through the system. I'm all for a national health care plan, and this is the beginning of that, and I hope that we continue to go down this path where everyone will get health care. It won't cost, and literally, pun intended, an arm and a leg. And it will get better. I mean, two of the things I thought were automatically great were that you couldn't get dropped and kids could stay on their parents' health care plan for a little bit longer than they normally did. Those were two wonderful things to get started. So hopefully it's just a building block to eventually get there. And, you know, we'll still continue to get health care plans, and people still want to be doctors and nurses, and hospitals run well, and you know, and all that. I mean, I just think it's the beginning of the end because, I mean, the beginning, I think it's the end of the beginning and the beginning of something good. However, my big worry is I'm a big Ralph Nader fan, and he trashed the Obamacare, still does, because not that it didn't favor a single-payer system, he does, but he wants it to be consumer-friendly, not written by the politicians, the lobbyists, the insurance companies, and that's who wrote this. And that's why there were so many exemptions and there were so many excuses. And this person got out, this group got out. And it's just, you know, it's got to be like the Three Musketeers, all for one and, you know, one for all. And you can't have these exemptions and we can't have this. And, you know, and I think we'll get there eventually. hopefully in my lifetime, because I think it's an important thing. And so that's all I got to say.
Okay, let's move on. I am a news junkie, and I have to admit that, you know, I just cannot resist news. And my favorite weapon is CNN. Yeah, we're going to talk about the stinking plane. Yeah, MH370 is just dragging on and on. Conspiracy theorists are having a field day. Gary, is this just part of our psyche? You know, if we have no answer, we have to invent one?
Yeah, I think we have to fill in the void. I think we're looking for some kind of... I think we're trying to fill in the void. I think it's, you know, it's conjecture, it's fun, it's the Globe, it's the Inquirer, it's all these things, and it's everyone thinking, what do you think, what do you suppose, what happens? I don't know what Occam's Razor is here. Probably my guess is at the bottom of an ocean, and... these poor people are all dead, but it is exciting to think about it on some level. You know, listen, a lot of people have relatively mundane, dreary lives, me included a lot of times, and we come home, we go to work, we hop into bed, we have dinner, you know, and this is like, well, what do you think? What do you think? Whether it's the airliner, whether it's OJ, whether it's whatever it is, we want a distraction from the mundacity of our lives, and CNN is just providing that right now.
I like that. That was a great comment.
Thank you.
It just bothers me that we seem to be so wrapped up in stories that don't have an answer. I mean, obviously we've been doing it for years and years and years. You know, do you really think that this is the way that the human being is?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We our lives are not like, you know, television lives. We're not like my life or your life isn't that I'm going to you know, I'm not going to let you die on my watch, or I'm going to sit there and, you know, the counter on the timer is going down from 10 to 9 and the bomb's going to explode and kill a million people. My life is like most people's lives. We go to work, we do our job, and hopefully we enjoy it, and we come home. And for a lot of people who have jobs that really are not their existential, you know, purpose, whether it's, you know, they're just hardworking, you know, people, but it really isn't their dream of a job, they want something to distract themselves. And I think this airliner and all the experts and being involved is just a way to take up some RAM drive, get through the day.
Sam, I've got to get your comments.
I got to agree with Gary. I mean, I think the coverage is just ad nauseum on CNN, and you know, obviously they think that's what the ratings must show it, and that's what they're doing, and that is. But you know, we all forget. Yes, it's we have to invent the answer. I agree, that's human psyche. Originally, I had to think of some real devious things was afoot. I do think the plane was attempted to be hijacked and flown into some Malaysian tower, like of the 911, like 911 into the whatever the capitalistic buildings were in that area of the World Eye. I believe Malaysia has some giant twin tower type buildings that they were going to fly into. I really believe that was it. There was definitely going to be some sort of hijacking, and it ended up in the ocean. And the scary thing, you know, the scary thing is, I think governments know that. I think our government knows that, or something does. And there's just been, and the longer they can play this out, the more people will get bored with this and move on with their lives, whether how mundane or exciting that they are. And that's it. And then people will forget about it because we have our attention spans are not that great. But I do think something devious was attempted on this plane. The poor families that had to deal with all this, I feel for them. But there is some sort of cover-up because it just amazes me that 30 days into this disappearance, with all the technology, you know, all the king's men and all the king's horses, can't find this plane. And real leads have turned out to be phony leads. I mean, a piece of yellow garbage in the ocean they thought was a a life jacket or something. And I'm thinking either we've been hoodwinked to think that our spy satellites and our NSA agent Bob and all these people really can find stuff, or, and that they can't, or there is something there. Because, you know, and it's just mind-boggling. You know, now we've got the pings, and it's in a totally different area, and they're sending 800 more ships. And Simon, as you pointed out, who the hell is paying for this thing?
Right. To the best of my knowledge,
what a whopper of a bill this will be.
The bill is $53 million right now.
Jeez.
And obviously it's going to keep climbing. Do you remember the ship that got stuck in Antarctica, and you know that they had to drag it out by icebreakers, and it, you know, that went on for a couple of weeks.
But CNN didn't give it the coverage that it's given the plane.
Right. that bill was enormous. You know? And right now they're fighting over, who needs to put money on their Visa card.
So it'd be the Malaysian airplane, or who owns Malaysian Airlines? Malaysia, the country?
Yeah.
It's nationalized?
No, I'm not sure it's a national treasure.
So all these participating countries and or private corporations will then send a bill to the Prime Minister of Malaysia, due in 60 days, $27,500,000, and he'll go back. Can I have an itemized statement, please?
I'm not sure it's quite as simple as that.
Well, as you said, just put it on the Visa card. You know, swipe.
Bill, what's your opinion of Flight 370?
I also feel it's amazing that they cannot find this thing. One of the things that I read was something from ABC. I apologize for not using CNN or Fox as a source. But they talked to this person, Tony Tyler, who's the head of the International Air Transportation Association, who said essentially, oh, shit. We can't lose another jet. We got to do something to not lose jets. which, you know, that's a pretty bold statement because, if you look back at Air France, what was it? The one that crashed off the shore of Well, it was on its way from Rio de Janeiro to Paris back in 2009. It took them 2 years to find the pieces, and it cost $135 million to find that after 2 years. And I would think with inflation that we're gonna spend a lot more than that, and it's probably going to be 3 or 4 years before we find anything that of what happened to this jet. It is so baffling. It kind of makes me feel a little more safe, because I was concerned about what I might be reading or connecting on the internet and the NSA finding this stuff, because if they can't find a jet that's humongous compared to little old Bill Conrad, you know, I'm not worried about the NSA anymore, because they can't find the jet, you know? So
right.
That's just where I am.
I'm in total agreement with you. Now, Gary, put your psychologist hat on for a moment. There are 229 people missing. What would be the sensible thing for Malaysia Airlines to do? You know, is there a way to keep the families happy?
Simon, I honestly, it's such a hard thing. I mean, it's what a conundrum. I mean, they're most assuredly all dead, and people want to know. I mean, you just want to know how your loved one died, and you wanted to know. You want to know if it was it the cause of a. Are we good on the line? Is there some kind of noise there?
No.
We're okay.
Life is good.
Okay. We want to know. At least certainly I would want to know. Like, I want to know who to hate. If someone that I love died, I would want to know who to hate. Because hate is a good thing. You know, I'm not going to consume me, but for the moment, I want some place to put my anger. Is it because of... was the pilot a terrorist? Was the mechanics not doing their job? Was there something going on where the plane just, you know, was structurally not correct? I would not want my loved one to die in vain. Like, if better screening could be come out. Like, a lot of times when people have a loved one die, they come up with some kind of foundation or some kind of education or some kind of thing that they could work on that can make, like, the person's death make sense to them. But right now, all of these families, they have no understanding of what happened, and I think they just want to know what happened.
Yeah, I think you are completely correct. And anyone else want to
when would
chime in?
Gary, I liked your summary there. Excellent. When would they be declared dead for insurance purposes, or did that ever happen? Or when would Malaysia pay out?
That I don't know. But again, if I don't know.
Peter was on. Maybe we should ask him that. I mean, you couldn't commence a lawsuit now because you don't know how they were killed, or was it a structural thing? So nothing, you know, none of all the ambulance chasers could be coming down there because there's no answers to what happened. So no one is quote unquote liable at this point, correct?
No, wrong.
Right, no one's liable right now.
Lawsuits have already started to fly.
Pun intended.
The pun.
Wow.
But then now you have international, right? Because of people from all over. Oh, geez, what? It'll be 20 years before. You know what? The lawsuits might get settled before, after the plane is found.
Oh no, the lawsuits will get settled
before the plane is found.
I still don't understand why we haven't sent a submarine over there. Well, could someone explain that to me?
I did read an interesting article, and it's all about state secrecy.
If you
send in, let's say, a Los Angeles class sub, you know, they don't want everyone pinging them.
You know, I just really expected, you know, like Richard Bayside to get on his Voyage of the Bottom of the Sea type submarine and get over there and find out where the hell the plane is.
You guys remember
that show?
I do.
That submarine could do anything. You know, they solved all sorts of problems. But, yeah, that's what I would not understand. I mean, I understand it's a tough, tough part of the world, ocean-wide. Simon, you were telling me, what, 40-foot waves, 40-mile-per-hour wind. It's a no-man's land in the ocean. And for planes, can only go out so far to refuel. It's difficult for ships. So I'm thinking, I've seen these submarines, I mean, these nuclear-powered submarines. I mean, why is the one over there? And now you're telling me, oh, they might, you know, the hunt for Red October. They might see what our antenna looks like or whatnot. So to hell with the people who get killed. Our state secrets are more important.
Well,
if they are lying in the bottom of an ocean, because we still have to. You still, I guess, if I was a family member, Gary, I sure as hell would like to think that since they can't find them, maybe they are alive somewhere on some weird terrorist type thing, and something strange is going to happen. And that would be for what I would have to hold out to keep me going.
Yeah. I mean, that would be. I mean, you'd grab onto anything, I guess.
Right, exactly. And that'd be the best thing to grab on, because you could think your loved one was still alive.
Right.
Okay.
I found one thing. A British sub, a British military sub, is part of the hunt at this point, but it's the only sub.
Right. British subs are great.
And it probably can only go down about, you know, 600-800 feet, you know, because it's a really old sub, but who knows?
Well, send over James Cameron. He found the Titanic, for crying out loud.
There you go. like the Hunt for Red October and all that, you know?
I mean, look at that stuff. Did you ever see the special of the documentary that Cameron did on, you know, his obsession with the Titanic afterwards?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he went down there and they did this documentary on, you know, it was excellent. It was real incredible stuff. And they brought up artifacts and all that after he filmed the movie. You know, I'm thinking, you know, how deep was that? The Indian Ocean can't be that much deeper than in the Atlantic. Maybe it is. I don't know. But they have the equipment if they want to use it, I'd like to think.
But, you know, this goes to the heart of the issue. Who wants to show their private parts to the rest of the world? I mean, the satellite images are clearly... were crap. No one wants to actually publish what they really were. Today's news or yesterday's news was the Chinese search vessel, you know, detecting the pinger on the on one of the recorders, and it looked like a microphone duct taped bottom of a fishing pole. You know, I mean, really, no one is into this. Other than maybe the families, yeah, that have missing members. Yeah. It's a game of chess. Would you agree with that, Gary?
Yeah, I think I'm the lone wolf here. I want my government, as much as I am upset with them a lot, to have plenty of secrets, to not let anyone know what's going on. I think it's a pitched battle right now, and I think based on our science scores and our math scores that that we're going to be in trouble if we're not already. But I mean, we have to have as much security as we can. We can't let on what we know.
Right. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, 229 dead people is not nearly as important as, let's say, Iraq or Iran or Syria. Am I wrong with that statement?
Well, I don't know if that's... I don't know. I mean, is that's a setup question. I mean, it's a kind of a setup question, and there's no good answer to that, because it's one of those things where it actually may be that if you give up information that it could endanger a lot more people. That's actually a possibility. But when you have 229 souls that are dead and we're seriously looking for them, you know, it doesn't play good on the headlines. It sounds really callous and pretty horrible.
Right, but you know, this goes back to the original idea about, you know, what makes news, and this, in my opinion, doesn't make news. You know, a plane went down. I personally am very sorry. Yeah, I feel for the families involved, but does it warrant, you know, so far $53 million search effort? Or should we just...
Well, of course not, Simon. Of course not. I mean, on some level, you could save 500,000 people in Africa probably with that kind of money. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you wanted to make that kind of calculation, you know, okay. But what do you do with that?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
It's a very good question, and I think everyone has that issue of, you know, but we do that in two ways. We do that on a macro basis on the faith and credit of the United States of America. And we do that. Last night I went out to a very nice dinner, spent a lot of money, and I could have eaten one-tenth for that, eaten some protein and some fruit, and sent $100 to a charity in Darfur and saved a village for a week or a family for a week. But I didn't do that either. So, you know what I mean? It's like it is one of those things, like, how much RAM drive can you put towards something as you live your life? I honestly don't know. It's a very vexing question. Certainly valid.
We'll come back to it. Let's move on. Bill, I'm going to stick this one at you. Earlier
okay.
This week, Chris Crispy was cleared of all wrongdoings in the Bridgegate scandal. But the question I have is, who wrote the report and why? The report was written by one of Chris Christie's best buddies. Any fallout yet?
There has not been, but I think the question is, and it also rests with me, I doubt it. I don't believe him. He only surrounds himself with people who agree with what he does and believes that everything he does is right. So if you need it for Christie, that's the kind of people that are around him. So, you know, I don't believe him, you know. He's a micromanager. He likes to be involved in every single thing that everybody does. So, again, I just don't believe that he didn't know what was going on and he didn't actually tell them to do. And that's it. You know, I think he's lying. How's that?
I love it. And Sam, you're a political animal. Any thoughts on Christie?
Well, you know, I don't like Chris Christie, so I echo what Bill just said, and I'm going to defer to him because he's, you know, hears and sees. I mean, that's his governor. He knows more about him than I do. But it doesn't surprise me as the guy had huge aspirations, pun intended. He also is egomaniac. I think he thinks he's bigger, pun intended, than he's supposed to, than he really is, you know, because he's a Republican governor of an alleged Democratic state. And I think people weren't gravitating to him because of that. And he looked to consolidate his power, like all egomaniacs who are in government of both parties, surround themselves with, with crash, what's that line, Shakespeare? Yeah, surround me with, Caesar, surround me with people who are fat. Young Crassus has a lean and hungry look, you know, and that's what, and even Shakespeare had it back then, but Caesar. Christie has got nothing around him but yes, men and women. They're going to use their power to punish, not to help. And that's a terrible thing. And that's one reason why, Gary, I'm a little bit different with you with the NASA's and whatnot. I don't trust our government because the people running it seem to be all they care about is themselves and their small circle of friends. And that, the more power they get, that's what scares me. I'm a cynic. When I can be proven wrong, I hope I am someday. So it doesn't surprise me at all that Christie did that to punish. Who did he punish? He didn't punish the deputy, the Democratic mayor of that city. He punished the people that are waiting traffic. I mean, what, you know, that's who got punished, the little guy. Welcome to the American political system.
I agree with you, Sam. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying on a geopolitical, macro political, nation state position, I would hope that there have our country best interests.
I understand what you're saying at that point. Yeah,
yeah.
But we do. I just cringe at the thought of the type of men and women that are in office now. And maybe there are some good ones there that they just I think, you know, what happens, Gary, because you get a lot of people who I think maybe want to do the good thing, but then getting that nice job, then the nice Bennies, those nice PERSs, what was Daly's favorite line? Don't make no waves, don't back no losers, hold on to your job. And something like that. I think he said something like that. I'm paraphrasing. And that's what we've got now. So you've got all these people in there who just chase, you know, it's a circular firing squad, chase their own tails around, make it look like they're doing something, collect huge paychecks, retire with huge benefits, go on to the private sector to lobby their old buddies, and they're not going to upset that apple cart. I mean, and Chris Christie, in his case, it would have been his aides. They didn't want to lose their job. I mean, they were probably afraid. Yeah, they were afraid maybe Chris Christie. What do politicians fear more than anything? An opponent. Okay? So
Christie had an opponent, and you know they had this other. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, but the Democratic mayor of Fort Lee, I believe, supported Christie 4 years earlier. Is that correct?
That was my understanding.
Okay.
Yes.
And then this time he or she did not, and Christie and his people had to punish her. And I think they also, there were some things going on about holding up some developments and some real estate developments and some other things that were going on in there, and punishing the people of Fort Lee because the Democratic mayor and the people who used the George Washington Bridge. I mean, I've been in traffic on that bridge for 8-10 hours over more than a few times in my life. And if I ever found out it had to be because of a politician punishing someone, I'd like to punch that politician right in the nose. Sitting on that bridge for 6 hours when it's swaying and this and that with your kids in the car, and if you're freaking out that you're going to run out of gas and you have to leave your car there, then walk across the Cross Bronx Expressway. So, not a pleasant thought.
No, yeah, it's all dirty. It's completely dirty, and he's just pretending he wasn't involved. But again, there isn't anything that goes on in the government that he isn't involved. He's a micromanager. He doesn't let anything happen. He's a control freak. So for him not to know is just beyond me. He knows everything that's going on there and has given everyone marching orders on what to do, period.
Oh, okay, gentlemen. Let's move on to a different subject. We're going to talk about the news that isn't. Have you noticed how incredibly quiet it is on Capitol Hill? Do our elected leaders actually do anything for their huge paychecks? Sam, I'll pick on you.
Oh, you're not picking on me. You're throwing me a Larry King-type softball. No, I don't think they do. I expect an election year. Oh, wait a minute. We're also coming into Easter break. Are any of them even there? Are they all down on a junket somewhere like Tahiti or something of that nature where the politicians go? I couldn't tell you. I don't think they do anything. I think it's the most this Congress is worse than the last Congress, which was worse than the last one, which was worse than the last one. And we've just entered this phase that modern-day American politics, which is terrible. I mean, it's what the Koch brothers want on the right. It's what George Soros wants on the left. And some of the people in between do some things. Once in a while, they actually stumble around the dark and find a light switch and actually pass something decent. And I think it's because chaos causes them to do that. That's it. And then we go back to this. We've got gridlock. And I don't mind gridlock because the government doesn't stop. It continues to operate, obviously. We just don't get crazy legislation shoved down our throats. With gridlock, and that which is a good thing. So, do they earn? No, they don't. It's all about them. They make incredible amounts of money, incredible amounts of benefits. They can live. How about the money they raise that they can keep and funnel to themselves? How many of these politicians have their brothers, their sisters, their mothers, their fathers, their girlfriends, their boyfriend on the payroll of their campaign to reelect me to office? You'd be amazed. It's blatant corruption. Jesse Jackson Jr. went to jail for this. I don't know who he pissed off for, you know, funneling money back and forth. They all should be. I mean, I'm amazed at a local level. You know, you check out who the campaign treasurer is, how they spend their money, because it is public record. And it's like, wait a minute, why aren't they all in jail? Well, that's because the FBI and the Justice Department picks and chooses who the enemies are. One corrupt politician, every once in a while they throw us a bone. Jesse Jackson Jr., but I'm thinking our local congressperson here has done way worse than Jesse Jackson, but, you know, he can't do anything wrong, you know, and I think that's the way with a lot of other people, but once in a while, one gets out of line for whatever reason, and they throw the American people a bone and say, see, we're doing this, and I think it's terrible because the amount of monies, and now we just had a Supreme Court rule that Forget about, you know, you got to be, the rich can even get richer, and the politicians will even get more corrupt, because now there's no limits on campaign contributions. And, you know, the Citizen United was terrible. This last one's even worse, and it's like rubbing our faces in it, and there's no stopping it. There's just no stopping it. And so why, and I guess the answer should be, why should they do anything when they get paid not to do anything?
Right. They get paid to do nothing. So it's a wonderful situation. And in fact, I'm seriously considering a run for the Senate.
You should. You should. You know, especially, you know what's funny? You laugh at this. When you've got a quote-unquote invincible senator in a state, and like no Democrat or Republican wants to challenge Simon in your state, you probably have both Republican senators.
Oh, yeah.
And no real hardcore Democrat, a Democrat of any means, a mayor or somebody like that, wants to try to go through the money-raising foundation to do all that sort of stuff. So they stay out of it, so they either get no opponent or they get a very limited opponent. So you should run. And maybe you could just be so radical out there, you know, standing for all the craziest things in the world, and you'd raise money, and you put Jan on the payroll as your campaign manager, and you raise $2 million to run statewide. You spend nothing on advertising, and you spend it all on your campaign staff.
Right.
And that's what they do, and there's odd people who do that. Because no, they can't get credible candidates, and once in a blue moon you get a witcher nominated. Like, remember that woman in Delaware?
Yeah.
The witch. Remember she beat the establishment Republican candidate. No one had ever heard of her for whatever reason. I don't know if she would. And then when she, but she still was able to raise a fortune to run against, I think it was Biden's replacement, and. Live high off the hog. And I remember she had her husband was on the campaign payroll, her son was, whoever got her newts and toads and all that stuff to throw into her cauldron of trouble or boil. But, I mean, that's what happens. And, you know, there is a lot of money. You know, it's an industry that has always been, what the great line about it, what the mother's milk of politics, money, money, and money. So, are we all surprised? I mean, you think about it. We have two guys running for president in 2012 for a job that what they each spend, $1 billion, $2 billion? Let's say $5 billion was spent for the presidential election for both parties. The job pays $400,000 a year. Is it any wonder why we're screwed up? Why would you spend $5 billion to run for a job that pays $400,000?
Good question.
Because it pays a lot more than that once you're in control of the purse strings.
Right. Gary, your thoughts?
My thoughts are I'm pretty much in tune with Sam. It is, I think, the Roberts Court. I think this will go down in history as a pretty horrid decision. I think one of the other things that's really frustrating is gerrymandering. In California, we certainly had gerrymandering, but, you know, we got rid of it. And it's a nonpartisan panel that decides congressional districts. So, you know, we get the government we deserved. We deserve, and we're just not a very informed and intelligent country. And we're too busy watching The Voice and American Idol. And I know I sound like an elitist, and maybe I am in some level, but it's very discouraging. And again, this is just where we are in our nation. The Republicans are total douchebags these days, and they don't represent anything that the public wants. Yet they lost the last congressional election on a totality of over, I don't know, some millions of votes, and they lost seats. The Democrats lost because even if the Democrats had way more money than the Republicans, if the district is drawn in such a way there's no way to get any kind of government that's representative government. And I don't understand why there isn't some kind of national lawsuit or something that is saying I'm not being represented because these are all just fixed. Everything is fixed before it even begins. So it's very discouraging.
Oh, okay. I know the definition and understand gerrymandering, but just for the sake of our listeners, would you like to explain what it is?
Well, and then look at this, the Democrats are as guilty as the Republicans. So when a state legislature and governor are in power, they could every census they could define the districts for each congressional seat, and what they can do is they can draw a district that's like 100% Democratic by like street by street, almost like making it very narrow here, very narrow there, and then have like five districts all Republicans that no matter what you do, they're going to vote Republican. So these people in Congress, they are not beholden to anybody. They will be elected every single year, unless I guess you get more extreme with a Tea Party candidate coming in and even more extreme than the incumbent. But the point is, it's not going to change party lines. And it's done by the party in power to make sure that they have this monopoly on this particular seat. So it's really that's how, you know, Dennis Kucinich got out, and you know, when he was in his seat. But it happens on both sides. It just really happens on both sides. Why I'm so frustrated now is because the Republican positions are not popular with the overall population of America. They're just not popular. The population of America is for background checks. The overall population of America is for immigration reform. The population of America is for all these things that the Democrats that the Republicans are against, and yet the Republicans keep winning their seats. So it's very, very frustrating.
Can I weigh in on something here? Gerrymandering is by the great ex-mayor, governor of Massachusetts named Eldridge Gerry, and he drew the line to keep himself in power way back when, the 1800s or something, was taken to the Supreme Court by another political party, because they drew the lines, as you said, per population to benefit whatever party was in power. That's a thumbnail sketch of what gerrymandering is. Something worse than that, though, Gary, it's not gerrymandering that leads to Republicans staying in power and Democrats staying in power. It's called the power of the incumbency. The power of the incumbency, of whether it's a councilman, a village councilman like I live in, or the President of the United States, is an incredible piece of power. I had a college professor at Wittenberg by the name of Steve Scheer, who now is the chairperson. He's a great college prof. He's the chair of Carleton College in Minnesota, a great little small college up there. And he used to speak to us and say, do you realize, and we'd go over these election results way back before computers and all that stuff, and we'd be knee-deep in looking at this stuff. And he would say, do you realize the Politburo has more turnover than the United States Congress? I graduated in 1982. So from 78 to 82, when he was my professor, that's what we would go over. And incumbents in America, Republicans and Democrats, would win almost 98.7% of the time they would win their seat at all levels. We looked at everything. The Politburo in the Soviet Union had more turnover, probably because they got killed, but they did. I mean, that was a matter of fact. So, and that wasn't because of gerrymandering, although that does factor in, because gerrymandering can only happen every 10 years when they draw the census. That's when they draw the lines. That's when the population change. That's when population shift, and that's why California now has more seats than New York does, you know, because of the population switch. That's why the South is getting more and more powerful because more people have moved down there. The Midwest is hurting because the congressional seats they're losing are being picked up by the more red dog states. And so that's the thing, and it always goes back to Citizens United and other things, is money, money, and money. It's the incumbency keeps people in power. I mean, I'm amazed at some of the amounts of money people spend to get elected to office, and they lose. Some, you know, even in a congressional race, it costs you $1 million to run for office. And a guy, and the incumbents all start with $5 million in the bank account. And so how do you go, unless you're self-funded, how are you going to raise that type of money? How are you going to even be able to compete with advertising signs, get out the vote campaigns, robocalls, tweets, Facebook? I mean, how do you do that unless you're a multimillionaire and you want to piss out $5 million and run for office? And I would, and then in that case, you should have your head examined by Gary.
Right. Good one. And by the way, gentlemen, I'm delightfully pleased that you're not fighting this week.
I will get along.
but of course, you know, that can change. Bill, do you have any thoughts on gerrymandering?
Well, I think that that they pretty much covered the subject well, and I think the real sad thing about America is that people don't take a real interest in any of the political movements that are going on there. They're not shopping for the good character, for the right thing. So they listen to the advertisements on TV and decide that whoever has the least positive or the least negative, however they want to weigh it out, is how they pick their candidates. And, you know, so if you've got a big budget to do all that, then, you know, you miss the boat. You just, you're a registered Democrat and you just vote Democrat across the board, and you don't pay any attention to what these guys are really going to do to you after they're in office. I mean, you know, look at Obama, you know. Excuse me. Let's go on.
Okay, I'm going to throw a question into the ring and step outside. one of the issues that I see that needs to be addressed at term limits. I mean, yeah, Sam, you talked about, you know, incumbents having a 98% chance of being reelected. Yeah, is it time that we do something? You know, we can only suffer 8 years from a president, although at the moment it looks like we might possibly see him reinvented by his wife. should we do something?
I think term limits. Well, see, where they've had term limits, they've done end of rounds. Here in Ohio, we put term limits in at the state level. And what would happen is I have our state rep, who's been there for 12 years, now has to leave. Guess who's running for his place? His wife. So, and she's going to win in a landslide. And if they don't have wives who want to run, what they do is then they step aside, get the pension, they wait for another government job to open up. We've actually had senators switch with congressmen, and then the congressman runs for Senate, or one runs for county recorder or county commissioner, and they all play the musical chair game, and they've come up with end-arounds.
So term limits doesn't work unless you go the whole way, and that means total nuclear option changing the way what it is. Obviously, citizen legislators doesn't work anymore, like our founding fathers set it up, and you know we have to change that. And, you know, and how do you do that? Either like I said, a total nuclear change in the way we elect people at all levels, or it's not going to work. Or you just have one, you go to maybe a parliamentary system, and you know with that within might bring in more political parties and more choices and whatnot, and you do by percentage of vote. So maybe you get a little bit more quality people in there like they do in Europe. I think it's great that they have 50 political parties in Israel. They have to form coalitions, and sometimes that's a good thing, too. People have to work together. Wow, who would ever think that would happen? whatnot. But, you know, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the only good thing that ever came out of the Confederacy was what they had was the president was 1 6-year term and couldn't run for re-election.
Gary,
to me, that's the only good thing the Confederacy ever stood for.
But Gary,
because what happens? Our presidents, if you look at the last modern day presidency, since Reagan, okay, his second term was spoiled and soiled by Iran-Contra. Then we had Bill Clinton. He had Sexgate, which was crazy on itself. But it ruined the second term. What could have been a great second term, because he and Newt Gingrich decided to work together for the common good and did some good things, would have been wonderful. But it got all screwed up because Gingrich got thrown out of office for doing his stupid things. But Clinton had scandals. George Bush had scandals. We've seen Obama with these mini little scandals. He just couldn't get anything done in his second term. The minute they get elected in the second term, they're lame ducks. So, but if you get elected for 1 6-year term and you don't have to worry about re-election, you might be able to get some good stuff done.
I don't think so. I think George Bush ruined our country in 6 years just fine. Anyway.
So did Reagan, too. I mean, the second term, what I'm talking to talk about is the second terms or so have not worked out for modern-day American presidents because of the way the electoral system has turned into a
I disagree. I think Clinton did great in the second term. I think Obama's doing just fine. I think George Bush never should have been elected. I think he did most of the damage in the first term.
He was elected, and his second term was terrible. I agree with you. Clinton's second
George
term
Bush
was
did
a failure.
George Bush did the most damage his first term. He started an
term.
Unjust war. No, the first term.
Second term.
The first term he went into Iraq.
The problem was the Supreme Court unfortunately ruled against Al Gore, and he didn't take the fight anymore.
But the first term was a disaster.
His first day was a disaster, but unfortunately he got elected. But if we only had 1 6-year term, we would have had somebody else in there in 06 instead of 08. That's what I'm trying
to say. I just don't agree with your analysis. That's all.
That's okay. But Gary, most historians will even look back and tell you Clinton's second term was a disaster compared to his first term because he got nothing done because of the scandals. Oh, no, excuse me. He did start the housing scandal because he gave the keys to the Treasury to Robert Rubin from Goldman Sachs, who started the housing bubble burst in his second term. But I don't think you won't acknowledge that, will you?
No, I would acknowledge that for sure.
Okay, that's what happened. Clinton started the bubble burst that blew up in 08 with him and Barney Frank. It's too bad. Mm-hmm. They started it. And by the way, Gary, I do want to give you a little hint here. You have a real moron, bad guy, running for Republican governor of California. Neil Kashkari, that's his name. He was at Spook Central during the TARP bailouts, and whatever he says about how the TARP bailout worked and this and that, don't believe him because he's one of the all-time great crooks who should be in jail. Help Joey Brown cleans his car.
I have no idea who you're talking about, but okay.
I knew it wouldn't last. It's only a matter of time.
Well, you know, he's partisan and he won't admit it. I admit it. I'm partisan.
Okay, so are we in agreement or not in agreement that term limits are a good idea, Gary?
It's probably a good idea, Simon, but, you know, unless you get public funding of elections, what you're going to have is you're going to have, Curly following Moe and Larry following Curly. They're going to be the same people who are at the behest of the people with money. Because if you look at just what it takes to get ground operations and all these things, it's pretty intense, and you need a lot of money. And so what you're going to do is you're going to put in a bunch of stooges over and over again. So fine, you give me 2 years or, you know, maybe four rounds in Congress, maybe 2 years in the Senate. But at the end of the day, what's going to happen is the person who's in the queue is going to be someone who is either a multimillionaire or is being supported by a multimillionaire. Every once in a while, you're going to have someone who comes out of the blue. But, yeah, you're probably right, Simon. But I think more than anything, you have to have public financing of all elections in order to have a true democracy of the people, by the people.
All right. But when you say public funding,
yes.
How far should that go? Does that include TV ads or what?
It would mean that you would come up with a figure, you would come up that advertise. I mean, it really would have to be big government at work. It would have to be something along the lines of what happens in Europe or how many weeks before an election you get to advertise, and it would be, if I were king of the world, Simon, I would say that I am going to, if you have a broadcasting license in our country, that you're going to have to give up this many minutes every election cycle for people from local stations, for the local ones, for the county commissioners and things like that, to the state and national, and you would have to do that. And it would be a set amount of money that people can get their message out in a set amount of time, and that would be it. But again, this is definitely the dreaded big government at work. It is you would have to have big government. Let's all say it together: big government making these decisions, which I think a lot of people have incredible mistrust for and just won't do it. So they would rather trust the Koch brothers.
Problem with, we do have public financing. I'm sure you click off that dollar from your tax return to give to the, for public financing now, don't you, Gary?
No, but it would stop any other kind of personal financing.
It's called matching funds. In the federal level, they have public financing. It doesn't work.
It would stop all of what's going on now, Sam. It would just stop it. It would not be allowed.
We need more radical overhaul. And by the way, your way would really give way to the political bosses even more power. To those, once they were in government, they would pick and choose who their candidates would be and who got that time.
The Koch brothers?
No, I can't think. The Koch brothers was George Soros. Well, let's go. Tit for tat again, okay?
George Soros. I mean, compared to George Soros and the Koch brothers?
No, the problem is we have public financing now at the federal level. It's called matching funds. Obama raised so much money in 2008, he didn't need it.
That's right. It would be a law that you can't use outside funds.
You could only use
government funds.
I understand
that. That would be the way to do it.
Government more power. That makes the government.
That's right. I want big government, Sam. I want big government. In this regard, I want big government.
That's why you live in California.
I'm telling you, I want big government.
You got it, baby.
That's what I want. I want very big government to say
you can have government.
We're going to give each candidate. No, it would work. We would give each candidate who gets so many petitions signed X amount of money to run a campaign for office.
How would the candidates be picked?
The candidate would be picked by getting enough people on a ballot to qualify to get government funds.
So you'd have like 1,000 signatures to run for.
I don't know. It depends what kind of state you live in. I have no idea.
Yeah, the political parties would be in control.
Whatever.
More so than they are now.
Whatever. You would have people do it, and if you can get enough signatures.
They're doing such a wonderful job now.
I thought, you don't throw out the good in service of the excellent. It would be my best attempt at doing things, and I think it probably would be helpful, and it would lead to more of a representative democracy. That's just my guess.
If you get money out of politics, then I agree with you. Whether it's government money or Koch brothers money or Soros brothers money or Monsanto money, yeah, I'd agree with you. The key is to get the money out of politics. How you do that, I couldn't give you the answer.
What do you mean you would have no money in politics? Zero?
They used to do that in the old days, Gary. That's what made a good country until they allowed, what was that thing called? Lobbyist. You have to get lobbyists.
I have no idea what you're talking about, how I'm going to put gas in my car to go shake hands if I don't use money.
What are you talking
about?
Politics. The only way
what are you talking about? You
got to
have money to run
to
a campaign.
You have money in politics. You have people bidding for favors, and the ones with the most money win, and therefore you have nothing. Money's got to get out of politics.
That's why everyone would get the same amount of money 6 weeks before a campaign.
To run for
and
office.
You
they still got to cut. They still got to create laws that are going to be bought and sold for by the people with money. Right? That's what I'm trying to say.
I can't stop every eventuality. No, you're right. I can't fix every possible eventuality.
Someone help me here. You know,
well, Sam, you're wrong. I'm right and you're wrong. Simon, tell him I'm right and he's wrong.
Well, look, you compared gerrymandering to the power of incumbency. You're wrong. That's two different things.
Simon, tell him I'm right, please.
I knew it was only a matter of time before.
Listen, if the guy wants to talk about the id versus the super id, I'm all ears to him because I don't know diddly squat about that, but I know more about politics than he does. He just won't admit it.
Okay. Stop it. The pair of you. You know, my question was quite simple. I don't see why you need to be a multimillionaire to run for office. I don't like it. Yeah, in my opinion, yeah, the system was designed in a completely different way. Right? Anyone could run for office. And it wasn't about the money. In fact, running for office didn't bring in any money. You were donating your time and effort. But that has completely changed. I just want to see the system changed, yeah, so that we can go back to a far simpler level. I don't want to watch TV ads, ad nauseum, for Obama or anyone else. All I want to do is get the basic message and make my decision. Am I wrong with this idea, Sam?
I want to hear what Bill has to say.
Okay.
Bill.
I
I got nothing to say here. I so enjoyed the show going back and forth. I just got all lost in everything, the fight. It was great. I love the dust.
It does make for a better show, let's be honest.
It does, you know.
Okay. Gary.
Noncommittal.
Gary, as long as you promise not to fight with Sam.
I am not fighting. Simon, I agree with you. It would be I want to get rid of the endless ads and the endless brainwashing and the endless scare tactics. And I don't know of another way to do this, and maybe other people who are smarter than I am could figure this out. I would just say, and I'm not really sure, maybe other people would know this, that in some countries, maybe in England, you are allowed to run, the campaign starts 6 weeks before the actual vote. And if it was government finance, meaning, I'm repeating myself, if depending upon how big of a district you're voting for, you got X amount of signatures on a ballot, however you got that, you would be able to get on in a debate, on televised debate, and some stipend of money. And that would all that would be allowed to be spent, nothing more. And that way, maybe someone like me, or someone like you, Simon, excuse me, or someone like Sam, or someone like Bill, could run. I could run.
Right.
I could get on stage, and I could debate somebody who has previously might have had millions of dollars behind them. But I could debate, and I could look into the camera, and I could say, this is my position. And maybe I could outthink the person, and outtalk the person, and not have them go back to when I was in ninth grade, and I stole a candy bar from 7-Eleven or something, and they researched that or something, and they found out every little thing that might be wrong with me or scare people about it. And it might lead to more citizens who are able to be in politics. Citizens like you, Simon, who could maybe run for the House of Representatives or for the Senate. Maybe people would listen to you and like you and say, boy, this guy is really, really smart. And we don't have the Koch brothers making you into a child molester, gay striptease dancer, drug user. And just destroy you.
Right. And you hit on a very salient point. You know, the six-week rule. I rather like it that there isn't time to generate gobs and gobs of cash and, you know, go... play with the media. It's short, it's sharp, you're in, and people vote, and you're either the winner or the loser. But the situation we currently have is that there's at least a two-year cycle of finding the next guy or gal to run the show. It's too long. People get bored. And, yeah, you're right. There's too much time to dig up the fact that, you know, such and such got a parking ticket in 1987. The whole system needs to be reformed.
Yes,
just fine.
I mean, look what's happening in Las Vegas right now. It's despicable, and this happens on both sides. This isn't a Republican or a Democratic position. But it's so sickening what's happening with this guy in Vegas, Sheldon Adelson, whatever his name is. And all these politicians are just going to kiss his ring. And this is a person who's going to be influential in who gets elected president of the United States. Right? This one person is going to have, he's going to have more influence certainly than you will, certainly than I will. And why? Because he makes so many millions of dollars every day from his casinos in Macau or whatever it is that he doesn't care. And it's just not fair. It's not right, and it's not fair, and it's not good for the country.
I absolutely agree. And Sam, I'll give you one last grumble.
No, I agree with him on that. Whether it's Adelson or Soros or Koch or the corporations or Citizens United, anybody with deep pockets, and they're bidding, and who does their bidding are the ex-congressmen and women and ex-senators and who are now lobbyists, and they know, and their aides, and they know how to wade through everything, and it's a terrible thing. And I agree with Gary; it's for the worst of the country, not for the best of the country. And less people are informed. He's right, and I will quote him. We get the government we deserve. I personally can't wait for the French Revolution type revolution that's going to take place. That's going to clean house, but it's probably going to happen when I'm 98 years old and somewhere else. But I will tell you this: next week we will be focusing on something. As we spoke and had a good conversation today, pro-Russian militias have seized government buildings in Kiev.
Whoa.
Interesting. Well, and can I just interject one thing? I know we're almost out of time, but the problem with having such a short introduction into the campaign portion of it, if it's too short, the potential is that you get somebody that's a white supremacist or somebody that's just completely opposed to looking out for the average person out there. You don't get the chance to research and to make sure that this person is really the real McCoy. So just by shortening it to 6 weeks, you're going to bring somebody into office who isn't the real McCoy, who's got a hidden agenda that they're going to bring in there. So we want to keep all that in balance. So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, we are flat out of time. So I'm going to go around the table and let everyone have their last grumpy say. Let's start with Sam.
I had a great show today. I love a little give and take. I also like a little getting along to get, you know, because that's a good thing too. And I hope everybody has a great week. It was a great show today. Enjoy it. And the one thing I was waiting for, I wanted to listen to Gary talk about, we didn't even get into it, was the shooting at Fort Hood. So hopefully next week we can talk about gun control.
All right. I love it. And Gary, the mic is yours.
Well, I actually agree with what Bill just said. That was very insightful, smart, and maybe there's a middle ground for all of that. I still really don't know. I really enjoyed today. I really don't know where Sam and I disagreed. I think the idea, though, that when I say I want big government, I usually say that with tongue in cheek, but in some areas, I really do want big government just because I have lost all faith in corporate America. And I will stay tuned for next week. Pick it up then.
Perfect. And Bill.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with Gary on this thing. It's sort of like, you know, the little boy that asked the mother, what is the opposite sex? And I think that big government is got a problem, and I think that the politicians, the political parties have a problem. You know, what is that other entity that needs to come along that will guide us and lead us into doing the right thing for the people? I don't know what it is, but it seems like it's neither government nor the political parties. We got to figure out what that is.
The opposite of sex is no sex, and I'm against that.
At least it shortens the life of the population of this planet, at least.
Oh, what's the title of your novel? Can't quite recall it.
Gary's novel, right?
No,
I don't have
your
a
novel.
Novel.
Mine is Requiem for Casanova.
No, what your earlier one?
Nomad?
Nomad.
I don't know. I was getting to plug my novel. http://www.killthedeuce.com.
Right.
Or you can go on Blogger News Network and see my, with the wonderful help of my editor, publisher, and all around rust about Simon Barrett's Requiem for Casanova being put out every week, chapter by chapter, and building an audience on the internet. Thank you, Simon. With fabulous background music by Tokyo Rosenthal.
Right. Oh, the things I get myself into. Anyway, gentlemen, it is time to wrap this up. I want to thank you all for taking part in the program today, and we will be back next week. Until then, goodbye.